Welcome to Help from Future Self.
Hello, Archons. Welcome to another episode of Help from Future Self, the conversational KeyForge podcast by and for KeyForge friends. I'm your KeyForge friend, and this week I am joined once again. We're reunited, my best KeyForge friend, SC Steele. What's going on, Sydney?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be back. I am so excited to be chatting today. Everything is amazing. Life is wonderful.
I would agree, except for the fact that I just found out that Canadian GameFound pledges are going to be not coming for a while because of the need to print foreign language decks for the entire Canadian order set before it gets shipped out and distributed. So I am a sad panda today. That was some news that I was not excited to hear, and it didn't even cross my mind that it would be sent to a distributor as a whole shipment rather than the way it's being done in the US where individual things are being shipped out. I guess it makes sense, but I do not like it.
I'm super lucky that the recent Master Vault update where they talked about being able to order decks in your English language if you get it delivered in a different language came out after I ordered my GameFound campaign, because I absolutely considered ordering decks in different languages for the fun of it, but then decided that because I probably wouldn't be able to play them competitively, I wouldn't be able to read them, I'd have to reference while I played, that it wasn't a good idea. But if I knew I could translate them to English, I would have done that and then still wouldn't have my pledge. Right.
Which is relevant news for today's episode, because your pledge is a big part of the episode. More details to come. Sydney, I know you have a lot of things you want to talk about because you've been on your travels. A lot has happened since you've only been gone for a week from the episode, but it feels like you were gone for a month with the stuff you're going to tell us about. So fill us in, what's going on?
Well, it's crazy how much has happened, and so much of it has been KeyForge. It's so funny too that the update came while I was in Tennessee, and I was like, what was it, like 500 something miles away from my decks at home. And then everyone started talking about like, cover your QR code, scan your stuff immediately. And my heart was like pounding in my throat. Oh no, what am I going to do? But I have some fantastic news and some actual notes on my trip too. So I was in the car on the way down driving to Tennessee, and I opened up my computer inside the car, and one of our listeners, Lazarus, reached out and asked to play Alliance. And so that was the only time the whole week that I could get in an Alliance game. And so I'm in the car, my kids are in the back watching Spider-Man on their iPad, Chris is driving, and I played two Alliance games against Lazarus. And I wanted to thank you so much for reaching out to play, because I had so much fun. And our chat afterwards about the way that the meta's going was really fun, and I loved seeing your decks, and thank you so much for reaching out. And again, if anyone else wants to play me in Alliance, I'd love to. So just DM me on Discord. But then also Joe from ABR reached out to me because he was also visiting Tennessee at the same time, and we tried to make it work, and he sent me a link to a gaming cafe that, and I just wasn't able to get the kids, you know, wrangled enough to be able to sneak away for some time to see him. But it was so cool to like be able to talk to people in my travels and try and make KeyForge work. But yes, lots of things happened last week. So the Master Vault update made me immediately want to scan my decks when I came home. And so I have been through this huge organizational process, and I can confidently say that at this point, I've gotten through all of my COTA and AOA, and I have 465 decks scanned. And one of the perks of scanning all of these decks is that of those 465, 9 of them gave me an Amber Shard. Like 9 of those decks randomly made it into my collection without having been scanned in the first place. So this is kind of a good exercise.
That's a very good point. Yeah. I mean, I also did not the scanning part, but the organizing part. And I've been using the 4-tier, 4-lane white storage boxes.
Same, for cards. Totally.
Yeah, I find they're really good. And so I had 3 already, and then I was using 2 of the 2-lane. And so I was like, oh, I need to get another one because I want to have them all in the 4-tier. So I do that. And then I forgot that I had all these decks I hadn't organized yet. And I was back to using 2 of the 2-lane. So I actually needed 2 4-lane boxes, and I didn't have them. So I was a little annoyed that I had to go back to that. But it's nice to have everything organized. It's all alphabetical. And it's I didn't bother doing it by set, which I know that's how you did your organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went just straight alphabetical because most likely the way I'm going to look through it is through DOK, since I'm not planning on scanning my entire collection, only decks that I'm going to be using in an alliance capacity or regular play. So smart. I just keep everything that way. And then DOK is like my full library because I actually don't display deck images. Like, I'm going to be honest, I was terrible in ABR for deck verification. I guess people just trust me because I think being public figures, we have more to lose by being dishonest. So there's a level of honesty and trust in us. So
absolutely.
I think I only showed one deck one time because it was like, hey, I was direct message, you need to do this. And I was like, okay. But other than that, I didn't bother. So I'm not too concerned about QR codes being out in the wild.
Totally. I have some of my like high profile decks up there. And by the time you're listening to this, you won't be able to scan them. But so far, nothing's been stolen of mine. And I'm pretty happy that it's been that way. Like, I know a lot of people have had that issue. But I honestly think that most people in the KeyForge community are amazing. And there have been some people who have publicly admitted that it was an accident because they were scanning things based on digital collections of QR codes that they had of their own decks. And they had things that they had already sold, and they had like, that's another thing that I'm scanning my decks for, is because the last giveaway we did, I didn't remove from my collection all of those decks that we gave away. So this is going to be a really nice hit, like refresh button hit, because I don't actually have those decks yet. They're all in my Decks of KeyForge. And this is the best way to just re-upload everything to Decks of KeyForge so that I have just my collection in there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense to me. We also did an experiment right before we got on. When we record our episodes, Sydney and I have a webcam on so we can see each other's reactions and energetic expressions as we talk. And so Sydney put up a QR code for me to scan through the computer because we just wanted to see what would happen if I already registered deck. And it did give a message saying this deck belongs to someone else. So for those of you wondering, how will I know if someone has my deck? It will prompt you with a message letting you know it belongs to someone else. So don't worry if you're wondering, did this work? It does work.
Totally. And there are two more quick things I'm going to mention before we get onto our topic. And one of the things is we got an email recently. Everyone who has a Master Vault account with the previous company, GG sent out an email recently saying you have to switch over to their Master Vault. But a small little paragraph in that email mentioned that the official KeyForge web store is open because their store, the Game Center, has an online web store. And so I went on there and checked things out, and it's awesome. They have some of the like legacy stuff that we expected for Vault Warriors, or some of the like the metal keys that they used to give away and the prize walls. And I actually have a deck book, the Vault Warrior deck book, the teal one, on its way to me right now.
Yeah, it was hard for me not to pull the trigger on that one, but I realize I really don't need it, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. The one thing I will say was, for me, I felt like those items were really coveted before, and the fact that you could just go onto a store and buy them was a little bit disheartening. But at the same time, I think it's just getting rid of the product that was inherited from FFG. If anything, like I do think that having the Fuzzy Gruen plushes available for anyone who wanted one, like, I think that is amazing, because I think that's the one thing that some FOMO maybe exists in the world, that you can't get those potentially. So I love that A, was in the pledges if you really want it, and B, that if you didn't get it then, now you can procure it this way. But I would say that seeing those things that I was like, oh wow, like I really wanted those key figurines, and now I have like zero desire. The metal keys now have lost their lusters for me as well. Like, I'm kind of like, they just don't feel the same, you know?
What's that that mental bias? You love brain things. There's a mental bias for like not seeing what isn't there. Because when I saw this stuff, the first thing I saw were the art sleeves for the ugly sweater, and it like literally hit me that like the ugly sweater isn't there, the hat, the scarf. So the stuff that isn't there,
the socks.
Yes, they started feeling more meaningful to me. Like, I have my sweater upstairs and my scarf. And what else was there? So Chris has the that side bag with KeyForge on it that was on the prize wall at one time. And so like, it's funny, it made some of those things feel more special, because those are officially like the only ones in existence, because obviously, if they had some, it would be on their web store, or maybe had would have been a GameFound pledge or whatever. So I completely agree with you, though, that seeing like the some of the figurines here, because I earned one. I won a store tournament and I earned one of these. And that one is like my most coveted like prize from winning a store event. And now you can just buy it.
Yeah. No, I agree. But it's still great that people have access to those things if they want it, because there was the anticipation and rollout, and then we never really got to really take advantage of that and utilize those as prizing. So it's cool that that exists now.
Totally. And the last thing, I promise, I know we're already like 11 minutes in, the last thing before we start talking about our topic is I wanted to thank everyone listening again for the amazing giveaway entries. I know that Blake touted how amazing they were last week, but they just keep coming in and my heart just keeps growing in sizes, and it's just so incredibly wonderful. And thank you all for saying such amazing things about us, and we are here for you. Like, you're the reasons that we do this. Like, we wouldn't, well, I don't know. I kind of think Blake is awesome, so I might hang out with him on a regular basis anyway, but getting together and chatting and putting out this podcast is all for you guys, and I really, really appreciate everything that you guys have said.
We did. Yes. Thank you for that.
All right. So are you ready to get into our topic for the day?
Let's do it.
Awesome. So one of the things that I got in my GameFound campaign pledge was a personalized deck. And if you want to follow along with us, if you aren't like driving in a car or anything, the name of this deck is Sydney Empire Musician. And first of all, love the name. Pretty great. I am not a musician in any way, shape, or form, but it's still lovely. And
I loved it too. I thought it was such a cool name.
I've gotten to play it a handful of times recently because I've been going up to Wisconsin for my, I'm air quoting here, my locals, because they play every Tuesday, and as only 45 minutes away and the only active community near me, because I can't get people to show up to my store yet, just yet. But we've been going up there, and I brought it up there yesterday, and or not yesterday, a couple days ago at this point, and been playing it, and it's just been so much fun, and it's exactly the Winds of Exchange experience that I want to have when I play. So I know that I have a handful of other decks I could open and play sealed and do a lot of other things with the quantity I have right now, but I've just loved bringing this to the table.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I think this is pretty neat. I love everything that we're going to talk about today with this. So yeah, this is going to be good. And awesome. I love hearing your excitement. That's always one of my most favorite parts about things like this.
Oh my gosh. Well, then I guess I'll just give it a go and get started on this. So first of all, yes. One of the things that like the first thing you see when you open a Winds of Exchange deck is the token. And I want to talk about this one a little bit because it's the Grunt. It's the Mars token creature with just 3 power. No, nothing special about it. It's just 3 power. But as my favorite deck up until this point was obviously the one that I played at Keyforge Celebrations and did really well with, but a Brobnar creature with a lot of power. And so I feel like right now my favorite decks have been leaning towards the token creatures with a lot of power, but that's because I think it's important. Like, one of the things that I'm realizing is that token creature power has really shifted how we play this game. Because there is so much splash damage in Brobnar. And I'm not saying specifically my 3 houses, for those of you not looking at my deck, Brobnar, Equidon, and Mars. And I don't necessarily have too much splash damage in Brobnar, but there is a lot. And with board control being exponentially high, when you get to low amounts of power. So like, for example, in this deck, I have 2 Ammonia Clouds, and the Ammonia Clouds are play, deal 3 damage to each creature. So I have 2 board wipes now. Unfortunately, that also hits the Grunt, but I have 2 board wipes for anything 3 power or less. And it's crazy that how easy it is to get rid of low powered creatures with very little consequence. And the Grunt does such a great job staying on the board. I've been able to do a lot of reaping with it. And that's one of the benefits I found of having a high powered token creature.
Okay. Now, before you get into any other parts of the deck, I just wanted to ask you this one question. So now that we've gotten a little bit of the structure of the deck, we know what the token is, how the token can be used or misused, and we know your other two houses. My question for you is, what does it feel like playing this deck? And what I mean by that is, like, what is the energy you get from it? What is the exhilaration? I want to know if it has a comparison, like, to playing a previous set, like your emotions. I want to know that, like, your initial times playing. What have you gotten from the feeling of it? Because for me, that's an important thing. What does it feel like when you play a deck?
I love this question because I absolutely had a very strong connection with previous decks I played when I played the Equidon House in this deck. And I think so this ties right in to talking a little bit about the Equidon House. So I'm going to put a little bit of stats in there. This Equidon House has 8 actions, 3 creatures and an artifact. And so I got such strong logos feelings in this deck because I am simply able to play for effect and then move on. And so if I have a hand of Equidon, unless like I'm, I guess unlucky isn't really the right word because the creatures aren't that bad. But if I'm unlucky enough to get all 3 creatures in my hand, then I still probably have actions that go with it that benefit it. And so I think that the feeling of speed, and not only just speed, but efficiency, being able to get use out of a card upon play was really high. So if not logos, I also got a pretty strong Star Alliance feel because I know Star Alliance had a lot of creatures that play from like that are creatures that have play effects.
Like from this set Star Alliance or in general, like the feeling of Star Alliance?
Good point. Worlds Collide Star Alliance. I really got a lot of like, I can play something and have an effect immediately and benefit from it. And then you still have to deal with either, if it's a creature, the creature on the board, but also the lingering effect of me having played it. Because a lot of these things do affect my opponent or they elongate my turn so I have more chances of affecting my opponent. And so I love that question because that's one of the things I really liked about this deck.
So overall, you said it had a kind of Worlds Collide feel in terms of a set comparison, would you say? Or just just like between them or more so just in that one Equidon factor?
I really think that between the all three houses, I got a mix of Coda and Worlds Collide because I got like
which makes sense.
The efficiency of Coda in some sense because I was just able to fly through this deck. But then I think that has a bit to do with the tokens as well because I have so much token generation in this deck.
That's one thing I noticed. Yeah, totally. It's a lot.
And so like that brings so much to the table and not just grunts on the board who can reap, which also amazing, but it just goes through the deck so quickly. Like in Equidon alone, I think I can create, if everything that has to fire can fire in the way that it's meant to, I think I can create 9 tokens. And like if I have 3 of those cards in my hand, I'm playing 3 additional cards that turn. Like playing tokens onto the board, coming from the top of your deck, you're getting through it so quickly. And I go back and forth all the time based on whether token generation hinders a strategy of a deck because you could tokenize your good cards or accelerates it because you're getting through your deck so much faster. And I've fallen on the opinion that in a deck that has a lot of token generation, it helps because you're just getting through it so quickly. And if you have a well-rounded deck, which I would consider this deck pretty well-rounded, then you're not looking for just one card of a certain type. You have maybe a couple backups, like my Ammonia Clouds. If I tokenize one, I have the other one.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And not to mention, you lucked out with getting the Mars token because of that fact. You have Kaboom in your deck, which for people who don't know is incredible if you have a Mars token, because it's just basically straight efficiency. It says, put each Mars creature into its owner's archives, destroy each creature, gain 3 chains, Mars action. That is phenomenal with the fact that you can create so many tokens, because you can just go Kaboom, and now you just archived, like if you just did an Equidon burst, that's 8 cards essentially that you just threw into your archives that next turn you can do all sorts of things. So that is really beneficial. I notice Kaboom and a Mars token, I think, is one of the greatest combos you can have. Like I have Kabooms in both of the WoW decks I have, but I have no Mars tokens, and it made me so sad because I saw all the potential that existed there.
Absolutely. And on top of that, so there is an artifact, the Mark II generator, and it enters play ready and it has action, make a token creature. So that, like anything in Mars that can make a token creature that turn, because of the way Kaboom reads, it's each Mars creature. So the token doesn't even have to be ready. You can generate it on that turn as well. And it's just exceptional. Like I've had a lot of fun with this deck because the token generation combined with being able to use the tokens. I have one other Mars card that I want to mention. The Grondel. It's 9 power, 2 armor. At the start of your turn, destroy the least powerful creature. Play, make 2 token creatures. So this also combines really, really well with Kaboom because, well, it also, it's, this one happens to be enhanced, so I'm super lucky there. So if I then Kaboom it and then get it back, I can play it again later. But with the destroy the least powerful creature, Grunt is 3. If my opponent has a token that is 2 or 1, I'm solid. Like I'm not getting rid of my grunts, and it's such a fantastic inter-house synergy. Although Mars is really good at that. Like I found that the Mars in and of itself has pretty good inter-house synergy. But yeah,
it does,
so
yeah,
I've been having a lot of fun playing these token generating cards because they just excel the game so quickly.
So we haven't talked about Brobnar yet, but I wanted to talk about something that I saw that I was just. Like I just kind of read every card just so I had some understanding, but this like immediately stood out to me. So I'm wondering if you saw this or have you gotten to pull this off yet? So the 3 cards I'm going to be talking about here, and I will go into the details of what they are, is Krejci, Fresh Marks, and Champion's Challenge. So Krejci reads, each time a player exalts a creature or a creature captures Ember, put 1 Ember on that creature from the common supply. So you're essentially doubling the Ember up for grabs. Then you have, and this is a rare, so you're not going to see this one often. Then Fresh Marks, a common, gives you an Ember Pip. It's an action. It says, play, destroy a friendly creature. If you do, exalt 3 enemy creatures, which essentially says, if you have Krejci out, put 6 Ember on your opponent's creatures. And then if you play Champion's Challenge, you destroy all those creatures, which means you just gained 7 Ember in one turn because Fresh Marks giving you an Ember. There's 6 on those creatures. That is more than a key right off of that. And I was just like, okay, that seems kind of broken and amazing at the same time. Because Krejci is a rare, you're not going to see it too often, but you got that amazing combo. Have you gotten to do that?
So I haven't gotten to pull it off, but I've seen that and it looks so amazing. If you switch in, I think instead of the Ragnarok prep actually also kind of sort of fits in there too. It's make a token creature, then if you control more creatures than your opponent loses 2. And so with so I create another token creature, and then if I control more, they lose 2, and then you Champion's Challenge and then fight them all and so that they go away. Like it's a fantastic combination of being able to like clear their board, but also get a lot of Amber. And I'm really, really excited because Might Club also has action, ready and rage a creature, and I have 2 of those in my deck, 2 artifacts.
That is amazing.
Right? And so with those already on the board, I really, fighting in Brobnar is just so important in this set, and they're so good at it.
And you having to get Brick Nasty just to make it that much more incentivized.
When I first saw Krejci, I was not impressed because like I've never really seen it as the most useful card because you have to worry about your own because each time a player exalts a creature or a creature captures, then that could be your own creatures. And sometimes in a lot of decks, like especially we see it a lot in Sanctum, capturing is super big Amber control. And that is probably a lot of the ways that you are creating or preventing your opponent from forging. And so you have to combo Krejci with a deck that doesn't have a lot of capture. And this deck is a great deck for that card.
Yeah, it does not have that. It's like there, I don't think there's like, aside from your Iron Captains, that's the only time that that's really happening. So it's, and the and Iron it's so Captains. Funny.
With the number of Mars cards in this deck, so the Iron Captains are Mars creatures, say, play each friendly Ironix creature captures two amber. And the Ironix is a trait. They are the only two Ironix creatures. Even the Grunt is not one. So
no, there's three because you have the Rebel. You have the Rebel and both of them. So
oh, that's right.
But they capture on themselves. Yeah, but they capture on themselves.
Exactly. So when
you play them, they capture two. But I mean, between that, that's a full key between those three cards if you happen to have them. Actually,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And one of the cool things, too, about the Ironix Rebel is play ready each of Ironix Rebel's Mars neighbors. And so there are a handful of ways, including the generator, that I can make tokens that turn. And so I've had times where I just I play the play some creatures, play the Ironix Rebel, get to reap with those Mars creatures, and then kaboom to get them all back into my hand. And so then it's absolutely fantastic. Like into my archives. But it's just been a lot of fun to combo. Like WoW has had a lot of fun combos for me.
Yeah, it's this for sure has a lot of amazing combos. Like when I was looking, I was like, this looks like a really fun deck to play the way it works. And then it has such an amazing finishing card, which is the one thing I want to talk about. And I don't know if you've gotten to use this yet, but thank goodness this is a rare. Let's just say that. I think we're all pretty familiar with this card. I feel like it was spoiled quite early on. And it's Corner the Market, which is an Equidon action card that says play during your opponent's next turn. They cannot play cards. And each time they discard a card from their hand, they may instead archive that card. How I read this is, deal with anything on your opponent's board that could stop you from forging next turn, and you can guaranteed forge your turn three key. That's what that reads to me.
Oh my gosh, it's even worse than that. And by worse, I mean so much better. Like the Equidon actions in this deck are Equidon actions in general, like they seem overpowered and you just simply have to manipulate them so they benefit you more than your opponent. So imagine the card you just said, plus in this deck is a closed door negotiations. Your opponent draws a card, steal one. If you do and your opponent still has more amber than you, repeat this effect. So you play closed door. Let's say they have a lot more amber than you. And then you make them or you let them draw a handful of cards because you're stealing half their amber or you're stealing.
Does it work? Is it only happen once again or does it continuously go? I thought this was the one that had the effect like, it just happens once. It just says repeat this effect.
That
it doesn't say continuously repeat this effect.
Fantastic question. Well then, see, still learning right over here. I may have been playing this incorrectly, but that's okay because that means my opponent didn't catch me either. But even so, playing this, giving them more cards and then playing Corner the Market, making so that they can't utilize those new cards. And then on top of that, this deck has Token of Appreciation, which is an Equidon action. Make a token creature, forge a key at +7 current cost, reduced by one for each friendly token creature. So the token creation in this house allows that to be less expensive, especially if you can have, with Corner the Market, you can have a two-turn setup for most anything. Like if you can imagine how hard some things are to set up, some combos, or you have things in two different houses you want to set up, as long as one of the first house in your setup is Equidon, or even if both turns are Equidon, if you have Corner the Market as the end of your first turn, that second turn is just crazy.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, especially for that key three, like it seems... I don't know. We'll see what it does. The fact that it's a rare may be the one saving grace because it won't show up as frequently. But I think there's going to be a deck and your deck looks pretty close to being the type of deck that this could get abused in the best way possible. But it's going to just make it so people like, I couldn't do anything on my last turn. Like I couldn't do anything to stop you. And I don't think I've ever seen something that prohibitive as a Keyforge card before.
Other than maybe Control the Weak, where like they pick the house that
yeah same sort of thing, but that still requires you can still do things.
That's
just a matter of there's more skill. This doesn't require any sort of skill other than you ensuring that they don't have anything on their board. That's the only thing you need to check mark. Can they prevent me from forging a key with their board? No. Okay.
No.
Cool.
Right.
That's it. That's literally
exactly.
it.
That's the trade-off of playing it later in the game. I've actually found that playing it earlier in the game also isn't that horrible because they probably haven't like crafted their deck yet where they have like a lot of a certain house in their hand, or they don't have a board or a good artifact line yet. And so playing it early also has its benefits because you just jump ahead, you leapfrog them one whole turn because they discard a couple cards, have it in their archives, but they haven't like made any progress, and you know they're not doing anything because they don't have a board yet. So it's been a fantastic learning experience playing with these cards together, because I didn't realize that like after a turn, like having Equidon and then creating a ton of tokens and then having a Mars turn benefiting from those ton of tokens being out. It's just, I'm loving this token mechanic.
Yeah, that is really neat, because you could set up a really good early Mars situation there. I like that. One thing I'm wondering about Corner of the Market, because it's not clear, is because I'm assuming they say you may each time you cannot play cards, and each time they discard a card from their hand, they may instead archive that card. I assume you would have to reveal the card, like it would go to your discard pile and then into your archive, so your opponent would see also what you're archiving.
Yes, that is how we've been playing it. So they would basically pick the cards that they're getting rid of, and then like they've been like showing me the cards and then just putting them in a pile underneath their Archon card as their archive.
Cool. Interesting. Yeah, I think that's interesting as well, because not only are you anything they're choosing not to play, you know what it is as well. So if they're like saving any big swing cards, you're aware of it. So that actually makes it even more OP. It's the one thing I think would even out that card would be is next turn you may discard any cards you want from your hand and instead archive them.
Ooh, yeah.
Or just in general, you can discard any card you want from your hand. There's not even the archive part of it, I think would have been better. So you could just basically get rid of your hand and just draw fresh seven cards if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think that it's not...
But it still doesn't stop the main problem, which is you could be in a position where you cannot respond to their third key.
Right. I don't think it's OP in that, like, if I've already gotten to the point where I'm at two keys and enough amber to forge and I play this and you can't stop me, there is a small chance you couldn't have stopped me anyway, or there's a small chance that, like, I'm ahead enough that it's already going to be my game. And so I don't know if this will turn games in a direction they wouldn't have already gone more often than just clinching the game for the person that was already going to win.
I mean, let's say this, though. They were in check for their third key. You do the steal thing, take them off check, then you play that.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty. It's a feel bad for them and it feels good for me.
Accurate.
Oh my gosh. Well, this deck has gotten me excited to play some of my other decks multiple times, because if I've learned nothing, like this deck I've played more than any other deck I've gotten in my pledge. And then back at Keyforge Celebrations, because I made it so far, that one deck I played more than any other deck I had available to me at the time. And if nothing else, I found that's what I love doing with Winds of Exchange decks. I actually like playing them multiple times before I go on to the next one. It's true with all decks that you don't get a good feel for them after one play, but that is exceptionally true for Winds of Exchange, because you can play a deck multiple times and still not see certain cards because they've been tokenized. And so I've just been getting a different feel from this deck almost every time. And even if I strive to go for certain cards, if they're tokenized, like I have to pivot. So I've just like, that's something that I've taken away from playing this deck, is that I really want to pick the decks that I'm interested in playing and play them again and again and again.
Yeah, I love that. That's my most favorite thing. Oh, yeah. I've been in a position like that myself lately, wanting to play the same deck over. It's actually the weirdest thing to me lately when I've been going to play. I've been choosing decks. Actually, I almost exclusively want to play Code of Brobnar right now. It is the weirdest thing. Like I've never had that, but I'm like, where's my Code of Brobnar? And I bought some that's like, I really chose some decks that had Brobnar in a way I really wanted Brobnar. And I found out like, whoa, I think Brobnar Coda is my favorite house from Coda now.
Oh my gosh.
Like really solidified. That's what I want to play. And the reason being is I think it has the greatest space for interesting play and utilizing board. And I think a lot of it has to do with where the meta is. I think back when Coda existed, the meta didn't behoove that sort of play, but now we're in a place where it does. So you can get away with establishing boards, having battles. It's not just playing cards like it used to be. And I think that's a big part of it. The house has evolved with the meta, making it, when you get it in a certain way, really potent.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that a lot of times, OG houses, like the first set that they come out in, they are pretty powerful, and it does super depend on the meta. Like when Worlds Collide came out, and both Star Alliance and Saurian were like the dominant houses in that set. Whereas like the meta has kind of shifted right now. Like WoW has even bigger boards than Worlds Collide, and Mass Mutation like went over to enhancements, and I think that the even though not a lot of people have played Dark Tidings, the Unfathomable in Dark Tidings is pretty incredible, and it did just simply get purely better in Winds of Exchange. But that's going to be also another exciting thing to explore, because I think next to Equidon, like Unfathomable is the house that most people know the least. And so the exciting opportunities in WoW are just, they just abound.
Yeah, I would agree.
Awesome. Well, that is everything I have on my deck, one of my named decks. And I'm so excited to share all of that with everyone.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm definitely a little bit jealous, but also going to be patiently waiting mine, and then we'll do this episode all over again, hopefully.
Exactly.
And so without further ado, we will move on to the closing segment of the episode, the one that we cannot end without, our titular segment, which we call
Help from Future Self. Future Self.
Sydney, I understand you have a fantastic one for us today.
I sure do. One of the things I've gotten, especially from playing in person, because I feel like I'm definitely paying attention more to what my opponent's doing in-person games, is now that boards are even more incredibly important in Winds of Exchange, I'm learning when I can completely ignore them. And it's interesting to like realize that even though they have six or seven creatures out on the board right now,
you're talking about your opponent, right? You're saying ignoring exactly. Your opponent's board?
Yeah. Okay. So like they have six or seven creatures out, and that's more than average for like an old school, like any other set really. And so they have six creatures, two of them are from each house. I'm not really that scared. Like if they have a distribution of houses, or let's say that they're tokens that may have a drawback to existing, and I could point out some specific ones, but let's say they can't reap, or they can't really do anything effective, or you think that they may be affected by other things on the board before it even becomes their turn. Like when I have, I mentioned the card in my Mars house, Grondel, at the start of your turn, destroy the least powerful creature. That's probably one less creature they're going to have on the board at the beginning of their turn. So I've done a lot more analyzing, like, is it worth dealing with their board when my race game might simply mean reaping with my board instead of fighting, or playing my Equidon house with all of my actions and forwarding my game, even though they look like they have an incredibly scary board.
Interesting. I like that. I can definitely see how that can work in that sort of manner, and how you'd want to make those considerations and the trade-off. I mean, there is the thing you got to think, can they reap out for a key? That's really the right thing you need to be considerate about. But aside from that, you're looking at the, I guess it's the offense versus defense side of it. Do you need to stop what they're doing versus is what you're doing more impactful with putting them on? Maybe they can't do what they wanted to do because they have to address what you're doing. And I think that's fantastic.
I like the way you put that, because offense and defense, like if you think about it, all you have to do is separate their defense or offense into three separate teams, because they're three separate houses. So like if their offense and defense on house, like, I don't know, Brobnar isn't as scary as it looks like, because there's only three of them out there. And sure, they may fight you, but are they even going to gain amber from that when they do that? And obviously they might. It's Winds of Exchange. But those kinds of considerations of offense and defense of each of the houses available to them might be a better way to think about it than simply just staring at their huge board and thinking that you're going to need to stop them.
Mm-hmm. Totally. That's a good point. I like that. Little strategy advice from the old SC Steel.
All right. So we are on Discord. Link is in the show notes. You can find me on TCO and Discord as SC Steel. So Blake, where can people find you? And you got anything going on?
I took a break from content this week. Just had a busy busy life stuff. And honestly, with all the WoW stuff coming out, I didn't feel like I would be contributing anything truly meaningful. So hopefully that'll change next week and I'll be able to maybe bring something else to the table. But as of right now, I know that I won't have my own GameFound pledge for a while, but maybe some angel will bestow me upon something else that I can utilize in the future to create some cool content. We'll see what happens. But you can right now find me on Discord is always my preferred place if you want to reach out and have a conversation, play an alliance game, anything like that. It's Boulevard Blake, number sign 3840. That's BLVD Blake, number sign 3840. And my YouTube, if you're not already subscribing, please do so. I would greatly appreciate it. Get those numbers up and be able to share my thoughts and feelings about this game with you. There you can find me under Boulevard Blake. The actual at sign is BLVD Blake HFFS.
Awesome. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Help from Future Self. Until then, stay forging.